Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Great to have you with us on this Monday. Our number 1-800-795-9565. Matt Leon, next half hour to talk about the Eagles' big win yesterday. Meanwhile, Audrey Snyder in a few moments to talk about Penn State's big win Saturday night. Today's show is brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I don't care whether it's commercial, personal, business insurance, whatever it may be. They have the resources to find you the right insurance at the best price for you. And then they want to make sure you're completely covered. So if something happens, you know you have the insurance and the insurance agency behind you to make sure that you get what you deserve in times of trouble. That is Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Not only did Penn State beat Ohio State Saturday night at Beaver Stadium, the Cubs go to the World Series for the first time since 1945.
And he will hit a ground ball toward short. Russell goes to Baez one. Over to first. The Cubs are going to the World Series. The Cubs win the pennant. National League champion Chicago Cubs will play the Cleveland Indians in the World Series. All 25 guys, plus the coaches and manager Joe Maddon, celebrating on the mound.
And believe me, the nation is enamored with this. Fox Sports 1 is getting huge ratings. Now, we'll go to over-the-air Fox for Game 1 tomorrow night. Corey Kluber will go for the Indians and John Lester on the mound for the Cubs. This is going to be one fun World Series to watch. That's Pat Hughes on the Score WSCR. Our play-by-play call of the day. All right, let's bring in Audrey Snyder from DK Sports. Audrey, welcome. It's great to have you with us as always. Many thought the margin of error was small. Many thought Penn State would have to play a near-perfect game to win. They did not play a perfect game and still won. What does that tell you?
You know, to me, Steve, that's the thing that makes this even more impressive when you look at Penn State and the fact that for a while there, it looked like part of the story could have been about the miscues on special teams with the blocked field goal, the safety, the muffed punt. But then the story becomes special teams for two extremely positive reasons with Cam Brown and then, of course, the Marcus Allen field goal block recovered by Grant Hilley for the touchdown. So to me, the margin of error, we thought it was so small. Talking to Trace McSorley last week, he thought it was going to be small as well. Turns out it was wacky, it was wild, and that was not the case at all, but it shows that this Penn State team has a lot of players that are capable of stepping in there. To me, Brandon Bell, Jason Kubinda, their return was far exceeding any expectations people had, and the bar was set pretty high for those guys as fans waited for them to come back. But what a difference those two made for Penn State, and much a credit to this defensive line, too. Really disruptive, sacked JT Barrett 6 times. So, and that comes with Garrett Sickles only playing in the second half. So, really, to me, Steve, there's just a lot of depth that showed, and definitely that signature win for James Franklin and this Penn State team.
Audrey, the last two games, Maryland and now this one with Ohio State, what improvement have you seen in that defense that has made a difference? Because really, the last 8 quarters, they've played well.
Yes, absolutely. And to me, it's a matter of now you're getting these guys who were thrust in there, the Cam Browns of the world, because of injuries. Now they're getting more experience, and those guys can go back to playing more of a complementary roles, which is what the younger guys are more suited to, but they've gained that valuable experience. And to me, that's shining through. And this secondary for Penn State, I think, They have a lot of talent back there. I think we're seeing that time and time again with a guy like John Reed, Grant Haley, who then gets it done on special teams. And he bounced back after the touchdown early on in the game, and he said, you know what, it was a matter of Sharif Miller came up there with the half and said, listen, okay, you missed a tackle. We have your back. We're going to move on. And I think it's the confidence, Steve. After the loss at Michigan, these guys rallied and said, you know what, we're not doing enough preparation to beat these good teams. We need to step it up a notch. And it's just the credit they have, and they really turned it around, and the defense, to me, just looks like they have some swagger out there right now.
Audrey, when you had a chance to go into the media room and talk with the players, what did they tell you about what the stadium meant to them?
It meant everything. And talking to these guys and seeing them earlier in the week when they were over at Nittanyville Thursday night, just feeling that energy and the excitement. I mean, this is a moment that they'll remember forever. And to me, it was really interesting talking to some of the older guys, your Brandon Bell, Brendan Mann, Garrett Sickles, the ones who came here when the program was really unsure of what direction it would head because of the sanctions, scholarship limitations, all those things. So talking to those guys, just being down there at the end, it was crazy. I mean, they struggled to put it into words. And you have guys like Marcus Allen, Jason Kabinda, two of the more talkative, charismatic guys, and they were struggling for some words. So to me, it was pretty crazy to see. And I was down on the field at the end, and saw Chris Godwin down there, and he just didn't know what to say. These guys just losing their mind, along with fans who were doing the same. So really just an incredible scene. And it seemed like the more students that were on the field and fans, that everywhere you look, they just kept coming and coming and coming. And you've seen the photos, Steve, we all have, and it's quite a scene that will be long remembered around here.
Where were you in the last 2 to 3 minutes of the game? Were you down there? And if you were, what was it like trying to get out of there so you could get into the media room and do your job?
Yes, after the Grant Haley touchdown, I quick grabbed my computer, was lucky enough to hop on the elevator, Steve. You know, sometimes that can be a little difficult as they hold them for the assistant coaches late in the game. But luckily I was able to get down there, out to the media room with about 2 minutes left in the game. And then I was in the media room filing a quick version of my story to get it ready to go, closed out of that and said, okay, something's in there if they hold off and win this thing. Just please hit publish for me. So then I made it out to the field with about 45 seconds left to a minute, was able to see the sideline just absolutely erupt and then be able to be on the field to kind of capture those key images. I mean, where else are you ever going to see a guy like Curtis Cofferin, you know, huge defensive tackle laying on the ground making snow angels in the grass? I mean, it's just remarkable.
How tough was it you to then eventually exit and get yourself into the tunnel and then out of, quote, harm's way?
Mm-hmm. You know, and Steve, for me, it was one of those things where I feel like I've been around here long enough now for 7-8 years that you've covered enough of these wild scenes, whether it's covering stuff downtown where the students rally and are all over the place, that you have to kind of figure out how to maneuver throughout the crowd. And so for me, it was as soon as the alma mater starts, okay, I got to work my way to the outskirts of the field because I wanted to be there to get that video of James Franklin coming off, ringing the victory bell, getting the players exiting the tunnel. And so luckily I was able to do that. It was way easier to navigate than I thought because you have that many people and you're kind of swarmed in the middle of the field. You just have to kind of use your lead blockers a little bit and get your way out to the edge. But, yeah, very, you know, as excited as the crowd was, I mean, to me, everything that was happening in the stadium, it was positive, wasn't disruptive. Obviously, there was some stuff that happened downtown afterwards. But for me, everything, it was good. Surprisingly easy to navigate.
Good. Offensively, they needed, you know, you can't win unless you come up with a couple of drives. Well, they came up with a couple of drives, one that before the end of the half that I think changed the dynamics of the night, and then the other one also changed the dynamics and got it back to a one-score game. What did they say in the media room about what they did offensively and how it worked?
You know, to me, Steve, and they had said it was just a matter of sticking with their game plan and knowing that at some point they were going to have opportunities to make these plays. And looking at the stat sheet, it, again, kind of defies all odds when you see that Trace McSorley only completed 8 passes.
Right.
But he had those big completions. And you look, you know, before the half, that drive, Deshaun Hamilton makes a great play on the ball over on the sideline.
Yep.
And those are those big momentum plays. And this is an offense, and the guys have said this and said it again, that thrives with that momentum and just having those chunk plays. And they were able to get those. I mean, it wasn't a consistent, methodical, always marching the ball down the field kind of offense on Saturday night, but they had those key moments. And to me, before the half, that was absolutely huge, because otherwise you're talking about possibly a 12-0 deficit and then Ohio State getting the ball to start the second half.
That's right.
So that was big, but they just go back to this and say, hey, you know what, we're confident that we can do it. We prepared. We knew we'd have our opportunities. And it's just a matter of having those, you know, handful or maybe even up to 10 plays a game where they're going to take those chances and connect on those bigger plays. And they're definitely more confident now, even despite the way the numbers looked for that offense. This is one of those wins that really can propel you to much bigger and better things.
And no time for them to rest. They not only win this game, okay, you feel great. Now you go. You have to go back to work, and you go on the road to Purdue this week. What are your thoughts on that one, and what have you developed on that so far this week?
You know, to me, Steve, I'm curious to see when you go into environments like that, and we've heard James Franklin talk about it in the past, when it's a matter of you have to create your own energy and your own excitement, because noon kick in West Lafayette isn't exactly going to be nearly as electric as the Whiteout. I think it's safe to say. So you have those guys going in there, and it's a matter of can you get up? Can you get off to that fast start? I mean, you look at the third down numbers, again, were not great, and you hate to harp on these things because, you know, they beat the number two team in the country. But there's definitely room for improvement with this offense. And, you know, Purdue gave Nebraska a run the other day. So, I mean, you're getting a team that's not great, but has had its own adversity with coaching changes. So Penn State has to come out, I think, and dominate. And I think they will. I mean, based off of what we've seen prior to the bye week, they had the momentum. They were able to keep that momentum. And right now I think it's a matter of just not overthinking it, just not taking this team too lightly. And I think if we've learned anything from being around James Franklin here the last few years, it's going to already be all about Purdue, and that's it. I mean, they'll put this one to rest pretty quick.
And I'll just make one quick comment, not, you know, and you can respond to it. But I've always felt that the, you know, people have talked about the even keel approach, even keel before Pitt. You know, why aren't they yet jumping rah-rah, even keel before Ohio State? I've always felt that approach was actually more for weeks like this after you do something big.
And if
you keep, I think that's the, you know, I don't think people understand, to me, don't understand that's the reason why you do it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you have to, throughout the course of the season, you're going to have those ebbs and flows. And it's a matter of if the approach is always consistent and you're always talking about the same thing. And even, I mean, we hear it all off season from him, Steve. It's always about whoever is, you know, that season opener. It doesn't matter who's week two, week three.
Right.
And absolutely, that's one of these weeks that's definitely the big challenge this week.
Audrey, a pleasure. Thanks so much. Appreciate your perspective very much.
You got it. Take care, Steve.
Audrey Snyder, DKSports.com. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to PurdyInsurance.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Insuring your business is serious stuff. You don't need gimmicks or cutesy mascots or punchlines. You certainly don't want red tape. You just want the right coverage at the right price. We're as serious about insuring your business as you are about running it. Selective. Response is everything.
Get to know your local Selective agent, Purdy Insurance, on Market Street in Sunbury or at PurdyInsurance.com. Find out what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Okay, great to have you with us. I mentioned Purdue earlier, and when you have an interim coaching staff like Purdue, I mean, it's the same coaching staff, but an interim head coach. It's a lot like what happened last year with Maryland, as an example. And the difference between Maryland and Purdue this time around is that Penn State went into the Maryland game, and it was the first game for that staff. And I think they had a bye week, as a matter of fact, before they played Penn State. So you really didn't know what to expect. You just knew that they were going to do whatever they could. And they did. Will likely played a lot of plays on offense. They ran some different stuff. Kind of let their hair down and just let it go. And that's what they did. The difference this time with Purdue was this. You at least now have a Nebraska tape to see what they're doing. And that's important. They went for it on fourth down four times. They ran a fake punt. and they ran early in the game a trick play with a pass off a reverse. Let's get to Tony in Shamokin. Hi, Tony.
How you doing? Great weekend.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. They did a lot of great things, and I think the fans had a lot to do with that.
I played Blake Gillikin, the punter.
Yeah, the one where he ran back in the end zone. He saved the touchdown by getting a safety out of that play. He's a really good athlete, Tony, and to the point you may see his athleticism really come into play in a couple of other ways down the road.
And Joey Julius on that tackle he made?
Well, it's an annual rite that Joey Julius does things like that.
So, I've said to people, I hope during the bye week they hopefully started printing some 99 jerseys.
Well, they can't. They're not allowed to. They're not allowed to print any individual player jerseys anymore. So, but nice thought.
Paris Palmer, he had another solid game.
Good observation, Tony, because people had wondered how would Palmer play in a game like this against that kind of talent. They do have a lot of great talent up front because they had to flip Mann over to the right tackle. And Palmer more than held his own out there, Tony. I thought he did well.
I thought he did real well. And, you know, for all the great athletes Ohio State's supposed to have, I think Penn State matched up with them pretty good.
Well, I think that's something that comes into play in this. I think that's part of my point of everyone felt Penn State needed to play a perfect game to win. Penn State did not play a perfect game and still won. Thus, I think that shows in some ways how they've closed the gap that people have been talking about.
Well, you know, you think back two years ago, took Ohio State to double overtime, and that was a Big Ten adjustment for Ohio State.
And well, I mean,
last year, with the penalties and all, you know, we think about that game. Penn State, you take those penalties that were called against Penn State, not penalties, a field goal and got non-interception. 2 years ago, Penn State wins that game.
I mean, I understand that. You also have other opportunities to win games like that. But, like, take, for example, last year, if Cardale Jones stays in the entire game against Penn State, I think that's a fourth-quarter game that goes either way because I think they're the ones that made the mistake of starting him. It wasn't until JT Barrett came in the game and he changed the entire dynamics of the game last year because I think that Barrett more fits what they do best. And, Barrett's the one that really kept him in this thing and kept him in front most of the night. I thought Barrett played well.
They met pass last year to Barkley when he was a free in the flat. Penn State scores a touchdown there. It changes the whole dynamic of the game.
Sure. There's so many individual moments in all these games. Now it flipped forward to this particular game. Penn State's the one that made the big plays at the big moments, even sometimes subtly. The Gillikin play is a big play in the game because instead of a touchdown off a Penn State mistake, it's only 2 points. So you save yourself, 4 points there. Durbin misses an extra point in the first half. So when you look at the turnover equals 3 off a field goal, not a touchdown. The safety equals 2 and not a touchdown. Then Penn State gets a block punt, gets a field goal. Then they get the block field goal, they get a touchdown, plus they missed an extra point. So in the special teams plays, Penn State right there has an 11-5 advantage.
And the bad special teams we had in the first half, it's amazing how that evens out.
I mean, it evened out in the game. I mean, John Reed is normally dependable. The wind was swirling so much because, I mean, look, Dontre Wilson fumbled his, Ohio State recovered. John Reed fumbled his, Ohio State recovered.
Yeah. Now, if Penn State wins out and Ohio State, say they beat Michigan, how does this play out?
Okay, if it's a three-way tie, the tiebreakers favor Ohio State. Remember, for Penn State to beat out Michigan, Michigan must lose twice because they already have one tiebreaker on Penn State, obviously, head-to-head.
So we got to root for them against Michigan State. I mean, we got to root for Michigan State.
Tony, it's a life brings with it strange bedfellows, I just want to point out.
You talked about horses that the state police had at the game?
Yeah.
Well, they're the same horses I probably bet on at the track. And that's why they work for the state police.
fact, Tony, what I did was I showed a couple of them your picture if they put their heads down.
Not him again. Hey, have a great day. Great win. Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Bye. Appreciate it. 1-800-795-9565. 1-800-795-9565. All right, bottom of the hour. News coming up next. Great to have you with us on board today. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served the customers of this valley for decades. Why? Because they're the best when it comes to finding you the right insurance for your needs at the best price. And they are the best that when there's a claim, they go at it aggressively. Because you, the customer, are number one from start to finish in the entire process. That's Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Q, it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
On the Penn State Sports Network, this is Penn State Nittany Lion Football.
Far side. Barrett takes the snap. They rush four. Back. Steps away. In trouble. And down he goes. McSorley takes it. There's the knee. 107,208. Believe the Nittany Lions have done it. They have knocked off second-ranked Ohio State in Beaver Stadium. 24-21. And this joint goes wild.
The Nittany Lions go back on the road to Ross 8 Stadium Saturday to take on Purdue. Kickoff is noon. We're on WKOK beginning at 10:30.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Today's show brought to you by our great friends at Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. So you want to have a great relationship with your insurance agent because you want to have somebody you can trust. Trust is so important when it comes to insurance because you want to have the right insurance where you feel like you're completely covered. And you want to make sure that it's the right price, fits your budget, and if there's a claim, that your insurance agent is going to represent your full and complete interest. That's Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury, go to purdyinsurance.com. Time now for our sports bozo of the day. And the winner is the National Football League. Why the NFL? Ask yourself, why is it that the New York Giants are playing the Los Angeles Rams in London? Now think about this. The game was at 9:30 Eastern time, correct? Do you realize in Los Angeles the game kicked off at 6:30 in the morning? 6:30 in the morning the game kicked off. Does anybody in that office think you get the top two markets in the country and you've got one with a 6:30 a.m. kickoff?
They've sold a lot of season tickets, but it makes you wonder how many of those in the thousands got up to watch that.
I mean, that's absurd. Think about that. 6:30 in the morning. I mean, that's the height of arrogance where you think that we could throw anything, anytime, anywhere. They'll watch.
And,
no,
they won't. When was the last time? When were they back in Los Angeles? Because they played at Detroit last week. So I would have thought they would just continue to travel east, right?
They did. They did. The Rams. The Rams got to. The Rams got to London Monday.
Jeff Fisher's racking up some frequent flyer miles.
But again, for the fans, this, you know, the entire point about having the National Football League is that it's an entertainment outlet. Well, it to me, you don't look at fans on the West Coast and kick off a game at 9:30 in the morning in the East Coast, where the game now kicks off at 6:30 on the West Coast in the morning on a Sunday. What? Who's running this show? I mean, who sits down in a meeting and says, you know what, if we kick that game off at 6:30 in the morning on the West Coast, they'll all be up and watch. It's the NFL.
And then you have Seattle and Arizona going way after midnight, so you're talking a good 16-plus hours of football coverage yesterday.
Exactly. You know, I mean, but more than that, I mean, it's just looking at the Los Angeles fans and saying, what are you doing? I mean, you'll watch. It's the NFL. No, I won't. I'm going to be asleep. I'll find out about it later. That's not growing the game. It's not growing the game. I don't know. I don't know. They sure do win a lot, the NFL, on this segment. Okay, let's bring in Matt Lee on a team that had great success yesterday, the Philadelphia Eagles. Vikings had not lost all year. We bring in Matt Lee on KYW in Philadelphia. So, Matt, what did the Eagles do yesterday that other teams could not do against the Vikings up front?
Minnesota couldn't block anyone. To keep it simple, I mean, I think the Eagles did some things they haven't done a lot under Jim Schwartz. Specifically, they blitzed a lot more than they have all season. But Minnesota just struggled up front constantly. And when you've got a quarterback like Sam Bradford, who you know where he's going to be, there's no worry about movement, there's no worry about a moving pocket, and you combine that with an inability to block up front, you're going to get in Bradford's face. You're going to force poor throws. You're going to force mistakes. And what you saw yesterday was a Minnesota offense that never got into a rhythm until garbage time.
Right. No, exactly. What about Wentz and the rhythm he found yesterday?
The first quarter was pretty rough. I mean, first three possessions, turnovers, you know, two interceptions, two poor throws. There's nothing. You can't spin that. And a fumble where he and Darren Sproles, I don't know if he let the ball go too soon or if Sproles closed too quick, but regardless, it was a turnover. What you liked when you're kind of looking in the big picture here and the development of Carson Wentz is he was awful in the first quarter, but it didn't dictate the rest of his game.
Right.
He was not lights out by any means, but he settled down, played efficient, smart football the final three quarters, and did a nice job. And I think when you're kind of looking at, you know, the mosaic here of his rookie season, you know, you want to know, how does he handle, how does he deal with pressure? How does he deal when things aren't going his way? How does he recover from a rough outing? And I think you saw some of that it doesn't affect him and he can turn things around. And that's a very big plus.
Yeah, no, that is a big plus because, again, you want a guy that's mentally ready to play the 3.5 hours and not just play the opening series.
Yeah, no, and you know, he couldn't have been much worse in the first quarter. And he recovered from that, settled the ship, and, you know, they never really did much offensively. I mean, that's still a very good defensive team out there in Minnesota. But really, once they stopped turning the ball over, they were okay, and it became quite apparent about halfway through the second quarter that Minnesota was going to struggle to score, and they weren't going to need a heck of a lot of points to win that game. And I think the play calling kind of showed that. And they did enough to win. And it was one of those games that, you know, it was 21-3 halfway through the fourth quarter, and it felt like it was 40-3. The game felt so out of reach for Minnesota because you felt they had no way to consistently move the football.
They hit the bump in the road with Detroit and Washington. Okay. What are you seeing and what are people saying about how they have reacted to that and how they've bounced back from that?
I think it's very good, not just the win, but the things that you saw specifically against Washington, because the Detroit game, they really, I don't know if you want to say should have won, but if Ryan Matthews just falls down instead of fumbling the football
right.
with 2.5 minutes,
right.
they'd probably find it would have been ugly, but they'd probably win that game. The red flag was Washington because it was a division game. And like I said, you know, yesterday it was 21-3, and you felt like Minnesota never really was in it. Even though that Eagles-Redskins game was 27-20, if you watch that game, it was not that close. Washington dominated down to down. So I think you like, number one, they didn't get close to Kirk Cousins last week. Now, they obviously played a much better offensive line than the Redskins, but the pass rush dictated and really set the tone. And then conversely, an offensive line that was shredded by Washington, specifically Vitae, the rookie right tackle who really struggled, they bounced back against Minnesota, against a good defense. There's really nothing you can spin there that they faced a lesser defense. And they controlled the line of scrimmage offensively. Carson Wentz wasn't sacked, wasn't hit a whole lot. So I think right there, those are two things you like that after being dominated so thoroughly on both sides of the football at the line of scrimmage a week ago, they really flipped the switch or flipped the script and dominated on both sides against Minnesota.
All right, now moving forward out of this, I mean, the building block, there's certain guys that I think, you know, we know obviously that Cox is going to play great. Malcolm, I mean, Jenkins, what kind of glue is he meant back there? I mean, what as a glue guy?
Yeah, no, he is outstanding, and it's very interesting because he was one of the, he's probably, just going off the top of my head, probably the best signing of the Chip Kelly era. And when he was signed, I think it was in 2014, because I get old, I forget the numbers. It might have been 2013, but anyway.
Imagine how I feel.
Yeah, but when he was signed, people were actually upset.
Right.
Because the free agent safety they wanted was Jarris Byrd,
yeah.
who signed with the Saints, the former Bill, and he hasn't been able to stay healthy, and he hasn't really made any kind of an impact. And you kind of look at it as Malcolm Jenkins was kind of looked at as a consolation prize, and he's turned into not just a glue guy and a key to this defense, but I think he's one of the best safeties in the NFL. He might not be a big hitter and quite the big play guy that maybe if you want to throw, you know, obviously a Brian Dawkins, but always in the right spot, has made plays that have turned games around, and is always somebody you can count on in that third level.
Yeah, and that's obviously really big for them. Now they've got one that I think a lot of Eagle fans always circle every year, but not only that, it's going to be a showcase game. They're going to play the Cowboys and Dak Prescott. So the NFL, which has been aching for young quarterbacks to be in some sort of showcase, now get one. And tell me about this matchup and what your initial thoughts are on that.
I think it's going to be a tough one because I look at that offensive line for Dallas.
Oh, they're good.
And really good. And that kind of leans you back to Washington, who's got a very underrated offensive line. And if Dallas can control the line of scrimmage, which they've done virtually all season, then you're worried that the defense maybe reverts back to what you saw more in the first half against Detroit against Washington. That's really where it starts for me. I think the Eagles will be able to move the football,
yeah.
and they'll be able to do some things offensively, but they've got to create chaos up front. They've got to get pressure, and I know it sounds simple, but it's really the key to football, and it starts right there. If you can get pressure on a quarterback, you can start doing other things defensively, and that's going to be a very, very difficult matchup. If I'm looking at matchups, that's the one I put right at the top, that they have to find a way, maybe not even to win that one, but to at least, you know, draw even there, and then you go from there.
Yeah, Matt, in fact, when I looked at the loss of Romo last year, everyone talked about, you know, Romo, nobody can quarterback. To me, the biggest disappointment in the Cowboys last year was when they lost Romo, the offensive line didn't take over for them. This year, obviously, they've taken over. They're playing really well. What's the word on Ron Brooks?
Looks like done for the year.
Okay.
Which it hurts, and they were kind of thin at corner, and so that doesn't help a lot at all. And we talk about Malcolm Jenkins. You might see him slide in some passing situations to the nickel corner. That's something he's done. That's one of the, you know, everything else we just talked about. He has a versatility in the secondary that's kind of rare. So you'll see him do that. You might see more of Jalen Watkins then in a safety position when they move Jenkins over. They're going to have to juggle some things. So they might face Dez Bryant this week. If they do, he's probably not going to be 100%. I'm not worried about Dallas beating them vertically. I much more would be worried about Dallas in the trenches.
Always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
Matt Leon, KYW in Philadelphia. We'll wrap up the show in a moment. Take your calls at 1-800-795-9565 on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Purdy Insurance. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Before we continue, many want to know if there's any suit news.
No? Okay, good. We can move on. What?
I told him safe travels to Carolina for Saturday morning.
He has been looking forward to this.
He has for months.
Such a long, long time.
Long before the procedure he had, yes.
Yes, long time. I mean, you know, so much so he's bagging it. He's bagging minisuit to go to the game. Stop laughing. I can always tell you're laughing at the other end.
That's the first thing you said. Wait a minute. That was kind of the snafu of the whole deal with it being for minisuit at senior night for him Friday night. Yeah.
Yes, and Megasuit's bagging minisuit to go. I'm telling you, it's...
He'll be hitting the red eye first thing in the morning. That's a been there, done that thing for you. I mean, that's...
Well, you know what? Somebody was asking me about the Duke-Rutgers-Cincinnati weekend. So I just explained I was going to do it. And they're like, oh, my God. I said, you don't understand. I said... I love my job. I'm not digging ditches. All right? It's like, now, I realize that when it comes time to, people talk about travel. And look, and sometimes the travel part does wear on you a little bit. All right? It does. Which, you know, that happens. I mean, that's always legitimate. I mean, Ron Cook was on last week, and that's what Ron was talking about, the travel part of it.
Yeah, that was the only really drawback he said, yeah.
I mean, and that really is it, except, you know, for the most part, I'm on charters. I'm not doing the, okay, let's change planes in Charlotte, and you go someplace. So I'm not in that mode. I'm not in that boat. Now, this one I'll have to drive. But I'm driving from a basketball game to broadcast a basketball game, then drive to do a football game, to then drive back to a basketball game. I'm not digging a ditch. Okay, with my bare hands. I'm announcing games. Everybody wants, you know, anybody who loves sports would love to announce a game, for God's sakes. No, I love my job. So if I ever talk about that stuff, I'm not complaining, I'm explaining. And there's a big difference between complaining and explaining.
As you have said before many of time, there are only so many jobs in your profession that let you do this day in and day out.
Well, I mean, you mentioned Mark Vandermeer, the Houston Texans play-by-play announcer, sent a very kind tweet. And then I surprised you and I told you, yeah, I've known Mark for 20-something years.
I completely forgot the State College connection.
He was here in State College. He was doing Lady Lion basketball. And then Mark then got the Central Michigan job, then the UMass job, then the University of Miami job. In fact, he was here the night Adam Talaferro ran through the tunnel. Mark was doing the broadcast for the University of Miami network. And then he got the Houston, Texas job. We had Mark on the show, I wanted to say 3 years ago. And Mark is about as nice a guy as there is anywhere. And he has worked his way up. He has earned his spot in the profession without question because he's great at what he does. If you ever get a chance on SiriusXM to hear a Houston, Texas broadcast, Mark Vandermeer is the consummate pros pro. Okay? Well, it's nice that he does something like that. But, you know, it's... You're right. There are only so many jobs in this thing. And believe me, each one of us, if we're smart enough, we know there are only a few jobs in this thing. That's it. I mean, you know, FBS, Power 5 schools, there's 65. Country has 320 million people in it. You darn well, you better believe you're lucky to do it. So... You don't ever see anybody worth their salt doesn't take it for granted. I can tell you that for a second. Not for 1 second.
Well, it's like I said to you at the top of the broadcast, getting home and then, you know, catching your, you know, the block kick replay that was on SportsCenter and College Football Live. And I knew that's what you're going to say, that you only maybe had heard it once or twice when you actually did the call live and then just hearing it there in the studio on the headphones.
Yeah, I mean, I heard it. In the post-game show, because there's different plays we play back in the post-game show. We play back the Black Knoll catch because that was the, you know, because there's certain sponsored elements. So I heard it there, and I heard it. Well, I guess I heard it on the show today.
Yeah, right here at the top.
Yep. Yeah. So that's it.
You've lived it.
But I'm busy doing other things.
You
for
are.
Example,
you
like
are.
Yesterday I got up and I worked on Purdue for about 5 hours yesterday. Went to practice. Tonight I'll go to basketball practice. You know, but today I had to teach class at 8:00. Then I had to go and there was a meeting for the football TV show at 9:30. And then I had to interview somebody for the football TV show at 11:00. Had something else at 1:00 and then did this at 3:00. So, you know, you go, go, go the entire time. And, you know, I got to work on the next game. And to everybody that has said something very kind to me about that, remember, it's the players that make the play. It's the coaches that make the coach. The atmosphere that makes it great. And you're the conduit between that. And when anybody says something nice to you and they feel like you did it right for once, the most important thing for you to say is thank you. So to all of you who have said something nice, thank you. I appreciate that very much. But it's Grant Haley and Marcus Allen and a whole bunch of other people you should thank. They created the thrills. No James Franklin press conference tomorrow because of his brother-in-law's service. It's going to be on Wednesday instead. Just want to make sure everybody knew that. If you were expecting to hear notes from that. All right. We probably will get Todd Blackledge on, what, Wednesday, Thursday?
Fingers crossed.
Okay.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.